So we've got four kids. Dawson with the beard is a freshman in Alabama at Samford University. Go Bulldogs. And Maddie next to John was a senior this year in high school. Then Hudson on the end will be 16 here in a few weeks. And then Emmy on this end is an eighth grader. And love those guys. Have a lot of fun. The next picture just shows kind of last summer we finished the end of a quest. Some of you guys may have heard John about 5 years ago said, hey, before Dawson goes to school, let's try to see a ballpark in every stadium in the country. See a game in every ballpark in the country. And over five summers, we just kind of made our family summer trips kind of work around that. And we finished up 2 weeks before he went to school in Busch Stadium, Go Cardinals. And it was a fun quest. A little bit about baseball, a lot about just being together as a family. And it was just a really fun experience for us. So that's us. Love to be together. And what we're talking about tonight, we get to practice a lot. We're talking about communication and conflict tonight. And six people in a car driving around the country gets to practice that a lot. And so we'll share some stories with you guys. But we're excited to be here.
Love it. Yep. So are we good?
Can y'all hear, John?
So a good communicator never messes with his mic or says, are we good? But I can't hear. I'm going to assume, Ryan, we're good. And then, we're talking about communication tonight. Mm-hmm. And that is lesson 9 in your notebook. If you're in a small group, that's in your notebook. If you're not, you've got that to look forward to. But I would say, Pam and I have been at Watermark since 2000, basically. And I think the very first time we shared some of these principles was in 2002. And it's crazy of like everything that's been uttered at this church, this has seemed to stick. And it's the way we think about communication in all of our marriage ministry. It's the way we think about in our small groups. When you start a small group here, you'll hear some of these same concepts. It's just been really, really transferable, I guess, and it's really stuck mm-hmm. with people. And so we're excited to share with you tonight. This is an incredibly important topic. It's something that we're really passionate about. The number one predictor of divorce is the inability to resolve conflict. And so if you can't resolve conflict, it's really, really tough to be married for a lifetime. And second is just the statistical probability around marital satisfaction and things like that around all things communication. And so there's a real famous study where they would take these couples and they would hook electrodes up to them. So think like lab rats. And they would watch them communicate. And they would measure things like heart rate and blood pressure and things like that. And so they wouldn't take any information about education or family of origin or income, any of those kind of things. And they would just watch them communicate. And then they could tell with about 87% accuracy whether this couple would be married 4 to 6 years from now, based purely on the way they communicated. It has such a predictor of marital satisfaction for a lifetime. Now, if you were today, I had a guy come up and just say, we're doomed. We can't ever be married because we would be one of those couples that would tank during that test. No, you can change. You may have come in here the worst communicator on the planet. And over time, I really do think you can move to a place you just enjoy talking. You can deal with some really, really tough stuff. Okay. But so those are a couple reasons why we're really excited about this topic.
Yeah. And then the other one is just for what it's done for us personally. And so it kept our family for five summers mostly sane from without killing each other. But then also just in our marriage. And so John and I have been married 20, it'll be 24 years. Is that right?
23. We'll be married 24.
We will be married 24. Yeah, that's right. Okay. This summer. And we had a good, probably 23 of those, 22 of those, 24 were good. Yeah. But I would say we had a good marriage. We had a really good marriage. We didn't fight a lot. But up until probably year 5, 6, 7, there was probably like 2% of things that we just didn't talk about. So we'd go there. It wouldn't go well. One of us would say, forget it. It's kind of not worth it. And then as we kind of read and just studied our Bible, first of all, and just studied it specifically, some of these principles we're going to talk about, we just said, maybe we should apply that since we're teaching it to others. And we just saw a difference in the way we communicate, in the way we can just stop and go, okay, we're doing that thing. We don't want to do that. I mean, our goal is, common, just the oneness. It just took such ground in our marriage that it took us to a place where really nothing's off limits. We can work through conflict. We still conflict, but we can work through it really well. So it's just made a big difference in our marriage, in our relationships with our family and with others. And so it's a big deal. And so we want to share a couple of verses with you guys. just to kind of anchor this, the first one is James 1:19. Dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And so just a great verse that applies to just the way we interact with people, not necessarily in that context, maybe a marriage verse, but it's very applicable to communication and just how we relate to others, that the first thing we should do, even though we feel like we want to turn it around, you know, sometimes, I know I do, I just want to get angry, I want to make sure John heard everything I said, and then I'll listen and make sure, like, okay, did you hear me? Got me? Instead of just, first of all, listening, just being slow to speak and slow to become angry.
Love it, love it. So that's James 1:19, and just the principle is just to listen first, right? Mm-hmm. So when you communicate, it's kind of a bit of a backwards way to get there, but a lot of times the best communication move we can make is just to listen, and see if you can push towards understanding, okay? And so the second verse, just to anchor some of these thoughts, is James 4:1. And the thought here basically is, what translation, I think this is, I don't know what translation that is, but what causes quarrels and fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you, desire and you do not have, and so you murder, you covet because you cannot obtain, and so you fight and quarrel and you do not have because you do not ask. I think that's NIV in that translation. So basically that a lot of times we think that we fight or we have quarrels because of something that's going on outside of us. And this passage says, no, it's actually the selfish desires that we have in our hearts, right? That's why Pam and I fight when we do. It's because we're both selfish. It's not something external. But when you hear us talk about why we fight or when we fight, what causes it, you'll hear things like, well, man, I'm really tired, you know, or the kids are being stressful, or maybe we don't have enough money, or, you know, your parents are here and they're driving me crazy, right? And so we think that all the whole conflict is something external. And as Christians, we need to know that generally what's going on is something is just the selfish button has been pushed in our hearts. And that's why we're having conflict. And so if that's the case, then that's something I've got control over, right? I can't make the kids be quiet. You know, maybe I didn't get a good night's sleep. Maybe I can't do anything about her money. Maybe I can't do anything about her parents being crazy, right? I can't do anything about that, but I can do a lot about my selfish desires, okay? And so those are two really, really good anchoring verses, James 1:19 and then James 4:1. And so I think just to start off, just to know that the goal of communication, I think we have it up there, is just mutual understanding, okay? The goal is not to be right. The goal is not to get them to capitulate, to tell you that you are smart, they are not, to get them to apologize. The goal, if you can get there, is just mutual understanding. And that's what you're driving at. That's what you're going to fight really, really hard for. Okay? And so from there, then generally, like what you should do about it becomes very obvious once you get to the place where you really do understand each other. So, good?
Yeah. And so, but what gets in the way of that is just these negative patterns. And we all do them. And a lot of us do all four of them. I know I do really well. But we're going to talk about these four negative patterns. So just listen. If you've heard them before, just be reminded. If you haven't, just kind of take note of these. These are four patterns that when conflict is coming, you know, that same argument's coming, a new argument's coming, you feel it coming on. This is something, the way you will tend to react is one of these four ways, or maybe a combination of them.
Yeah. So, listen for yourself first, good. Right? You're going to be real tempted to go, just to nudge them and go, you do that. You totally do that. Okay. And I want you to like, think about yourself first. Like, do I do that? How do I do that? What does it look like when I do that? And then if you've run through that, guys, you have any calories left, then you can think about them. But think about yourself first, okay? Yeah. So the first one of these here is just withdraw and avoidance, okay? And so that's the unwillingness to get in or stay in an important discussion, right? So it could be as obvious as here comes a fight, and withdraw would be to leave the room. It's like, man, I'm not going there. I'm going to leave. Or it could look like we both know there's an issue here, and I'm just not going to go there. Okay, I'm going to avoid that. And we think that's a really good strategy because then we won't fight. It ends up being actually one of the most detrimental patterns in a marriage. But that's what it looks like, either like removing yourself physically or emotionally or not going there. That's what withdrawal and avoidance can look like. Yeah.
And the way it plays out at our house, I don't think either of us have ever just left the room, but there might be sometimes I know where, like, so maybe I'm coming at John, I'm kind of got this agenda, typically with our kids and our plans, and I, some might call it nagging, I'm just coming at him with these questions, and I can see in his head, he's just like, what do I have to say to get this woman to get off my back? And, you know, you might,
give me the phrase.
It may feel like peace, but just that fake peace that comes from that. So there was no, maybe we're not fighting anymore, I'm not asking him a million questions anymore, but we haven't resolved the conflict. So even that is just withdraw.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah. I could just say what she wants to hear. So we're done, right? It's like, if I can get you from chirping in my ear, I will say whatever I have to say just to end it. Not actually having dealt with anything. I've just figured out a crafty way to withdraw from the conversation. The other way would just be, you know, the whole avoidance thing. And guys, you know, if you've been married any length of time, when your wife, there's different ways she says, hey, I'd love to talk. Right, it's like there's a tonal inflection in there that has it says so much, right? And so when Pam comes to me with the one that's not like I'm so excited about my day or I wanted to tell you just how awesome you are, it's like, hey, I need to talk to you about something you have done. You know that one. I can be apt to just know where she wants to go and, you know, think like a train conductor. I'm always switching the tracks so we don't end up where she wants to go. And so that would be an example of avoidance. Okay. And so, do you have any other thoughts on that? How to fix it?
Yeah. And so, I mean, just you can tell all those. You're not getting to the heart of the issue. You're withdrawing. You're avoiding the heart of the issue. So instead, if you find yourself doing that, fixing it is real simple. It's just staying in the conversation. It's a big enough deal. This thing right here, this marriage is a big enough deal to stay in it and to push through what might be hard, to work through this. And if I need to get others to help me, if I need to push through that tension, I promise the next time it'll be easier. If you both are in this, and so just staying in the conversation, and see if it's a big enough deal to do that.
Yeah. And then just telling your spouse a lot of times, like, hey, this is hard for me, but I care enough about you. I care enough about us. I want to stay in the ring, right? Without any kind of obviously physical violence, associated with that. But I'm going to stay here with you and I'm not going to run, here because I care about you. Okay. And so then I think if you're sitting next to someone who withdraws avoiding and you're going like, dude, you totally do this. Can I just make an observation? Generally that has something to do with you. So before you go throwing rocks at your spouse and going, why won't they talk with me? Why won't they deal with the hard issues? It could be, and I doubt it's all your fault. It rarely is. But there's probably something about you that makes it really, really difficult for them to have that conversation with you. And it would just be incumbent upon yourself just to ask, ask them, is there something I do that makes it hard for you to want to stay in the ring with me and have this conversation? Because if so, I'd love to deal with that first more than kind of your pattern. Okay. So that's withdrawal and avoidance. The way you fix that is just to stay in the conversation. See that as loving, see that as kind, see that, as wise. Okay.
So the second negative pattern is escalation. Escalation, and that's when two people just continue to just respond negatively toward each other, often kind of upping the ante till it gets more and more volatile, more and more loud, more volume, and just more and more hostile. And so for us, I can't even think of a time that we've yelled, maybe a little bit of raised voices, but we've never thrown anything or any of that. But we can get really sarcastic with each other. We're both pretty good at those last little jabs. Mm-hmm. And so it may not look like yelling and screaming. It may just look like, hey, I'm going to get one more sideways comment about him before I leave the room. And so that's kind of what it looks like for us. And that definitely is escalation.
Yeah. So, you escalate as a couple or as a person, mm-hmm. right? When you can't remember how you got there in the conversation, like you're having a big fight or a conversation, like how did we even get here, right? Because this thing is now all heated, and you trace it back, and it was something little. You've been there, right? They're 2 minutes late, and so they get there, and you know, all of a sudden you're just giving them the business. You know, it's not just today. You're always late. You're always late. You know, and you are irresponsible when I started dating you, and my friends told me that you were going to be irresponsible. And while I'm at it, like I hate your mom, right? You know, it's like, well, hang on. You know, like he was 2 minutes late, and now like we've globally characterized this person and made them horrible, and we're all mad about all kinds of stuff. rather than about the little event that was two minutes late, or not looking at someone when they walked in the room the way that they should, or responding to a gift, or any of those kind of things. Boom, 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 boom. That's escalation, okay? And so the problem with escalation is that a lot of times we feel better after we get that off our chest. They're going to feel much worse than you feel better, and they're going to remember it much longer than you do. You'll forget your escalation. They often won't. And your spouse will be able to remember a month, a year, sometimes 10, sometimes 20 years. I can remember being yelled at as a kid from a couple coaches, you know, and my dad a few times. Like, I can still remember that. And it's not that far off from some of our relationships with our spouses. And so just a way to think about that, imagine a big giant A-frame ladder. One of those kind of wooden rickety ladders. And so imagine Pam and I are on either side of that ladder. And so every time Pam says something to me, metaphorically, she goes up one rung, right? So she's now higher, and I'm like, oh, no. I've got a better comeback for that. And so I take two steps up. So now I've got the upper hand in the conversation, and Pam goes, nope. And she goes, I'm going to bring up some insecurity that you have and, you know, fire off, and I'm going to bring up now something that you did where you failed. And away we go. And both, just imagine both of us standing at the very, very top of that ladder, the thing starts to shake, and you know exactly what's going to happen, right? We're both going to fall off, and we're both going to get very, very hurt. So the best way to not end up at the top of the ladder is to never get on in the first place. And so the way you can do that is just when your spouse wants to kind of, you know, fight, you just go, I'm not in for that. I want to have a conversation, but I can't do it like this, right? Or if things get very, very, very heated, for you to say, we're going to take a timeout. Like, I want to have this conversation. I believe that you want to, and that it would be better if we were both at our best. But let's take 5 minutes. Let's take an hour. Let's take 2 hours. Get away, pray, think, and come back, and we'll be at our best. We're both going to come back here and just be Christian. But we're not going to press play on our emotions or the first things that we think of, or try to get the best jab. We're not going up that ladder. We will not escalate. So.
So I think that timeout is key. And if you're a withdrawer, an avoider, this is not a tactic to withdraw and avoid. So if you call the timeout, it's on you to say, I just don't think this will go well now. Let's take a little break. Hey, let's get the kids to bed. Let's sleep on it. You know, if it's late, hard conversations rarely go well after midnight. Maybe take a good night's sleep, get up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, spend time in the Word, and then reconvene. And so, again, the timeout is not a way to withdraw and avoid. It's just a way to say, I want cooler heads to prevail. I want to come under the control of the Holy Spirit, not try to just hold out for my way, and then come back together again with the goal of mutual understanding.
That's good. Okay, so that's withdraw and avoid. And the second one was escalation. And so the third one here is a negative interpretation. Okay, and that's when someone believes that the thoughts or actions are more negative than is actually the case. Right? You think what they say, you interpret that in a much more negative light, or you interpret their action in a much more negative light, or their lack of action in a much more negative light than the person actually intended it.
Yeah. So it can look really lots of different ways. It can be just a harmless question. Hey, John walks in. Hey, babe, what's for dinner? And I hear, oh my gosh, I should have picked up something on the way home. What is that smell? Instead of, hey, I'm hungry. What's for dinner? Just a simple question can be interpreted lots of ways. It cannot even be verbal. It can be like nonverbal. It can be a look. It can be a tone. And I mean, they didn't even know, but you're totally negatively interpreting it, thinking they're out to get you, and can just spin from there after that.
Yeah, and so we have so many examples of these. I'll just share a quick one. I've got long, drawn-out ones that are really funny. But I remember Pam would call. We had little kids. She'd call every day at 4 o'clock. And so she'd call and she'd say, hey, when are you coming home? And I would see her. This is like, you know, she called the landline more often than my cell phone. I would see her on there and say, Pam McGee, and it's 4 o'clock. And I'd find myself just getting mad. Which is not a good, like, if you wonder, like, it's not a good thing. If you see your wife on caller ID and you're mad, it's not a good sign, okay? And I remember just being so agitated because of what I was positive she was doing was, like, you know, calling me to let you know, let me know that she's home alone, you know, with all these wild Indians. She's trying to, you know, feed them and bathe them and, you know, just control the chaos. And she's wondering, like, man, what am I doing, you know, up there? Are you, like, working on your fantasy football team, you know, telling jokes and just walking around drinking coffee? You know, I'm dying out here. And so that's kind of the way I would interpret, hey, what time are you coming home? And so I remember one time going, oh, like, that could be a negative interpretation here. And so I remember just asking her, she calls 4 o'clock, you know, hey, when are you coming home? And I said, so about that question, like, what do you mean exactly when you say, what time are you coming home? And I don't know what she looked like, but I've got this sense. She's like, what? Yeah. Like, she goes, I mean, she went real slow. What time are you coming home for dinner? and I said, so you're just asking? She goes, yeah. And this is what she said. I'm just trying to think out, you know, the next couple hours and figure out when to have dinner on the table. And so, you know, if you know, it's helpful so that I can plan. And I was like, that's it? Like, there's nothing else that you're saying? She goes, like, she was so, like, dumbfounded by the conversation. She's like, no, I'm just asking what time you're coming home for dinner. And I was like, okay, man, well, forgive me, because I thought you were taking shots at me every day, like clockwork at 4 o'clock, you know, you're just throwing a punch. And I just thought, man, so I just said, hey, please forgive me. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, noticed, like, this tone when I pick up the phone. It's not loving and kind, but no, yeah, great. That's super helpful. And I probably started even just calling her and saying, hey, I've got a break here, and let me tell you when I'm coming home. So, but we get in those moments, and the way to fix those is just, first off, is to believe the best, right? Which I didn't do in that situation. I believed the worst about Pam, that she's taking a shot. So first off is you believe the best. And then second is if you can't, and sometimes you can't, you just ask for clarification. Mm-hmm. Just say, I mean, so this is what, I'm not sure what you mean when you call, or when you say, where have you been, or when you look at me that way. Can you tell me what you mean by that? Because okay? I'm not really sure. I want to give you the benefit of the doubt. I'm having a hard time. And so believe the best, and if you can't, ask for clarification. And you will just be shocked at how that will save you from so much heartache. And so, because I could have, like, think about that. Think about what would have happened there, right? For 5 years. Every day my wife calls and I get mad, right? I mean, for 1,500 days, I just get ticked off at my wife because she's calling. And what I would have missed out on if we hadn't have just made that little bitty tweak, okay? And so then, you know, if she was like, hey, I'm calling and I'm lonely and mad and I just want to take it out on you, you know, she just had to say that. I'm like, okay, great, we can deal with that, you know, but don't come at me sideways. When we were late with kids, a lot of times I would look at my watch and I would watch Pam. She would look at me and go, so you're looking at your watch. Now, are you looking to see, like, what time it is? Or are you telling me subtly that you think we're late and it's my fault, you know? It was like 50-50, you know. So, but every time I did that, I would have to say, man, I'm sorry, babe. You know, that's not okay to be, like, passive aggressive. Will you please forgive me? So if you're busted and you did have negative or wrong motives, just own it, okay? And ask forgiveness and truck on. Okay, so that's...
Yeah, so if you haven't heard this already, you will hear it a lot. So in Reengage, we talk about drawing a circle around yourself and fixing everybody in the circle. So in each of these, if this is not your big negative ditch, just think for yourself, what could I be contributing to? What am I doing that makes it where John wants to avoid? Or what is he doing that makes it easy for me to negatively interpret? So thinking about what is your part that contributes to it, even if you don't. So the last negative pattern is invalidation. Invalidation. And that's just subtly or directly putting down the thoughts, feelings, or character of the other person. So it's a subtle, like, man, I just don't think you're right, or I think I know better than you, or directly, like, you're wrong, you're a jerk, I'm putting you down, obviously. So it's just invalidating the other person.
Yeah, and so this was my, you know, I feel like I've just thrown myself under the bus the whole night. There's plenty of material to work with, to be sure. But
I was trying to get some stories in there about myself.
This is the one I really struggle with, okay, early on and even still today. And so what would happen is Pam would bring something up to me. And I don't know why. It was just this, like, this selfishness and this pride where, like, I couldn't be wrong, right? And so Pam brings up something, and I would just immediately start turning it on her. And I would, bring up some facts, or I would bring up some train of logic, or I'd bring up some history or something like that. And I would just dig in and go, nope, I'm not going to apologize. You will at the end of this. And I would just tell her, by whatever means possible, how she was wrong. Not on everything. Like Pam said, we had a great marriage, but there's just a couple things like I just couldn't be wrong on. And so we'd settled into this pattern where Pam was just like, fine, like I just won't bring that up because I'm not, I don't want to go through the whole dance. And it wasn't until we figured out kind of what had happened. And I was like, oh, babe, I'm so sorry. Like I do that to you. And the goal is not to be right. The goal is not to be wrong. You may be right. I might be right. But let me understand first before I go on the offensive and start to put you down. Okay. And so the way you just kind of you fix this one here is just to remember that the goal is mutual understanding. And so when Pam would say, I want to bring this thing up to you, I don't have to get defensive, right? Maybe I need to own something. Maybe I don't. If she says, hey, I'm wondering about this. Maybe there's something we're going to need to do that I won't want to do. Maybe it won't. The goal first is to understand. And by understanding, it doesn't mean that I'm saying she's right. It's just saying that I can see how you get there. That makes sense to me.
Make sense to me, but I want to try. That's sometimes what you say.
Really,
I
really
don't
hard.
Know that I understand yeah. that, but I really want to.
Yeah. And so that will help you get to this whole mutual understanding, okay? Yeah. Any other thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. So, just remember, so the fix it on that one is remember the goal of communication, which is mutual understanding. And so those four negative patterns, if you take the first letter of each of those, withdraw, escalation, negative interpretation, or invalidation, it spells weenie. And so in communication, your goal is to not be a weenie. And so whatever that looks like for you, that's what John's talking about. You hear that just here at our church, like in community groups, just in small groups. Like, what can I do to not be a weenie when I am in conflict, when I'm communicating?
Yeah. So, good principle in communication is you don't introduce a new idea at the very end, but I'm going to violate that thought, okay? this is what I've been thinking about a lot recently. Lesson 15 has to do with completion and the way that God has put us in our spouse's life to help them become more like Christ, right? So first 14, you're going to focus on you, and then you're going to see, oh man, there's this thing, this role I'm supposed to play in my spouse's life. That becomes really easy to do when you're doing all this well. That becomes really difficult to do when you fight your spouse at every turn and tell them why they don't see this correctly, or you get mad and those kind of things. They won't do that, or it becomes very, very difficult. And you're ultimately the one that ends up losing out. Okay? So I'll just about to get really real here. So I'm getting up closer to 50. And the craziest biological thing is beginning to happen. And it's my whole peer set. The hair on our head is thinning out, but our nose hairs and ears hairs are like growing at these astronomical rates. If someone could please explain why that happens, okay? So now the role of my spouse and now like our peers, like we got each other's back, is like you have to tell somebody, hey, bro, your nose hair, it's like way long. You need to clip that thing out before your next meeting, or your ear hairs, like you need to do something. They're like, like an animal has got lodged, is what it looks like. And so I found myself, this is really fascinating, because if they're my friend, it's very, very natural for me. I was like, I sent the text yesterday. Hey, bro, you got to tighten up your nose hairs before this next meeting, And they said, hey, thanks, appreciate it, But when someone has been like, they've like fired back or been combative with me, I find myself not telling my friends that. So it doesn't change the fact that they now have long nose hairs or ear hairs that everyone else can see except themselves. But I don't want to go in the ring with them because of the way they've acted in the past. And I think it's the same way with our spouses. That we have things about us, things that don't look like Christ, that we can't see and our spouse can. And so if we really will lock this stuff down, and it's not combative to have a conversation with it, they can walk up to us, in reality and say, nose hairs, ears hairs, or metaphorically, hey, big guy, you've got something there that I don't think you can see. I don't think you want to walk around with that, but it doesn't honor Christ. And it hurts our relationship. So I just want to take a risk. And when you are practicing the positive signs of all this, you say, thank you. That's really helpful. I appreciate that. And that is part of the role, I think, that God wants your spouse to play in your life. And if you'll let them, I think it'll speed up the whole maturation in Christ process. And if not, you miss out, and it stunts our spiritual growth. And so lean in, own your ditch, have a good conversation tonight. Which one of these do I do? This is how I think I do this. Is that right? How does that feel? How can I get better? Okay. Proud of you guys. Have a great night. Okay.
Have a good night. Cheers.